Good evening, everyone. The meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of April 18th before us. Are there any additions, corrections, changes to the minutes? Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. See no discussion. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, just to kind of keep everyone informed on the plan, tonight we're going to be taking up the three bills that are on the calendar, House File 2749, which is a small bill that after discussion of the other two bills, education, finance, and higher ed, we will presumably merge those into 2749 and then pass them out as one bill. Tomorrow, we are planning on doing agriculture, environment, and the jobs bill. And the plan will be that after session, we will take up agriculture and, depending on how the time goes, environment. I understand that there are caucuses in the afternoon. I don't recall exactly what time, 2:30, 3 o'clock? 3 o'clock for us anyway. So we'll break at that point, have caucuses, sort of see how the time is going and the bills are going with the earlier meeting, but either come in after that caucus or come in at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. I would guess more likely we'd come in like 7 o'clock-ish tomorrow evening, but of course we'll make an announcement on that tomorrow after we recess when we first meet. There will be a 24-hour rule on the agriculture and environment, but because jobs is just being referred to us tomorrow, there would not be a 24-hour rule for amendments on that. Then we'll take up on Thursday the final three bills, health and human services, state government finance, and public safety. So with that, anyone have any questions on that order? Representative Carlson.
Being that you brought up tomorrow and Thursday, what are your vehicle plans for those bills? Are you going to merge them into yet a...
I'm not planning on merging them into a new bill. We would just merge them into one of the other three. I think the plan would be that we would merge ag and environment into the jobs bill, and we'll probably merge the others into the health and human services bill on Thursday.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Other questions? Yeah, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if then ultimately they're going to be in one bill, what will be the vehicle bill for all of the conference committees at the end?
It'll be House File 2749. That is what is before us here. Other questions? Well, members, then I'll move that House File 2749 be referred to the General Register. And members, House File 2749 is a simple bill that basically updates some numbers. Page 1, line 16, it updates the budget reserve account to what I believe is the current number today. This number would really only become important if we dipped into the budget reserve account. And then as monies were coming in, it was the surplus monies in a later forecast were needed to fill it up back to the $1,596,522,000 number. Then if you turn the page to page 2, there's the closed landfill investment fund, the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Fund. These have been filled back up, and so this language that was in there is no longer necessary, and it's being deleted. So members, any question on House File 2749? Okay, members, with that, I'm going to temporarily lay over House File 2749. Members, then we're going to go to the Education Finance Bill. Representative Loon moves that House File 3858 be referred to the General Register. And I know we've got some amendments. Representative Loon, do you want to do the amendments first, or do you want to go through the bill?
Really your choice, Mr. Chair.
All right. Why don't we do the amendments? First of all, we have the A48 amendment. Representative Loon moves the A48 amendment, which I believe is a technical amendment. Can you speak to the amendment, Representative Loon?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and the 848 is a technical an amendment to adjust the appropriations for one of the particular provisions. This has to do with the Glenville-Emmons School District provision addressing an error they made in their referendum language. We were working with the department, and then on the fiscal note, we anticipated that we had an approximate amount, but it could float up a little bit, and so we set aside some money for fiscal note compliance within our bill. And so what the amendment does is we had booked $36,000 in the appropriation on line 18 of the tracking sheet, and this would boost it up to the fiscal note that we've received for $50,000, and it will reduce the amount we had set aside for fiscal note compliance to $51,000, and that will show up on appropriation line 230, so that balances out.
Okay, any questions to the A48 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, earlier you sounded pretty hard and fast about the 24-hour rule. I understand this is technical, and we generally accept technical amendments, but I'm glad to see that you're a little bit flexible about the 24-hour rule, being that this one came in today at 2:08.
Yeah, no, and Representative Carlson, you're right. This one didn't meet the 24-hour rule, and I guess I was planning on being pretty hard and fast on them, but being it's just a technical amendment, I felt this was something that we should deal with.
And if you'll recall, Mr. Chairman, the other day I said sometimes it doesn't hurt to be a bit fluid.
I recall that, Representative Carlson. Thank you. Any other discussion on the A48 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A48 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A48 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A46 amendment. Representative Loon moves the A46 amendment. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. There's a provision in the bill that would provide the equity revenue adjustment, which is currently only available to metro area schools, to all other schools. And it's referred to as the equity revenue bump. It's a 25% adjustment in equity revenue. This amendment would add a requirement that beginning with fiscal year 18, all school districts would have to have their school board opt in to this program with the adoption of a written resolution. And again, this is a program that is a combination of aid and levy. And so this would require school board action to continue with the program, and this is similar language that we have in other school board approved levy programs that are available to school districts, and the district may opt in for 5 years at a time.
Discussion to the A46 amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A46 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A46 amendment is adopted. All right, Representative Loon, why don't you go through and explain the bill?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3858 leverages approximately $55 million for some education finance priorities. As you all will recall from the target discussion previously, we do have a zero target, but we are both canceling a couple of appropriations and reallocating that money. And then by allowing school districts under what's called the maximum effort loan program the opportunity to refinance locally and get out of those loans and pay back the state, we recapture about $52 million. So that comprises the money that we are allocating in this bill. From that money, we provide $16.8 million in grants to support students with either direct services or better teacher preparation and training or professional development. $6 million is that for our intermediate schools and cooperative units, and these are schools that are that work with our level 4 special education students and those with some significant emotional behavioral needs. So this will provide additional training for those staff. We have $5 million for school-linked mental health grants, $3 million for community-partnered mentoring in our schools, and $2.75 million for positive behavioral interventions and supports to be incorporated into schools. $14.6 million is to help increase the supply of new and diverse teachers in our schools and help provide continuing education for current teachers. We have $4.5 million for future teacher grants. This is a suggestion or a proposal of from the governor's supplemental. $3.75 million for concurrent enrollment teacher education. $3.5 million for collaborative urban educator or grow your own program grants. And a $1 million teacher loan forgiveness program. We have $7.7 million for fiscal year 17 to, again, reduce that revenue disparity between metro and non-metro districts, the equity revenue bump, which I just referenced in the amendment we did. There is $7 million for school districts for broadband innovation grants, $6 million to support early childhood learning and literacy, $2.4 million for career and technology and adult education. So in the bill, there's about $14 million of combined initiatives that align with requests from the governor's supplemental, specifically $6 million in future teacher grants and paraprofessional grow your own programs. The positive behavioral intervention support program was in the governor's proposal. $240,000 to address a department error that was made in calculating and distributing QCOMP funds to two districts for fiscal year 16. $120,000 for GED testing that will be for fiscal year 17. And $69,000 to fund Metro Deaf early learning program. This bill also contains the policy bill, House File 3066. Much of it is policy changes requested by the department. In addition, there are some teacher safety provisions and a student discipline working group so that will take a deeper look at discipline issues in our schools. We allow for early learning coordination. There's two major programs that our school districts that address early childhood and parent education. One is ECFE, and the other is school readiness. They go to schools in two separate funding streams, but we do allow them to work to craft the learning program that works best for those communities if they choose to commingle those funds and allocate according to their area's needs. We also provide some more local control of some of the revenue streams so that school districts can best meet their own priorities. One provision having to do with the Office of Legislative Auditor report on teacher licensure, we create the educator licensing account. So the money that currently flows in from fees that are paid to obtain a teacher license or portfolio, licensure by portfolio, would now flow into a separate account that would go back through direct appropriation to the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators. And this, again, was a recommendation from the Office of Legislative Auditors report. And finally, we leave teacher retention policies to the collective bargaining table and local control and remove a statutory fallback position of seniority in those decisions. And specifically, I'm very pleased, actually, this is a very bipartisan bill. We had a number of proposals that came to the committee from some of our DFL members, and included in the bill a proposal by Representative Moran, House File 3450, and we've included $1.5 million for Girls in Action grants. Again, this is one of the mentoring programs I mentioned. Representative Seltzer's bill, House File 3332, for an innovative reading grant program. Representative Dabney proposed the $5 million for school-linked mental health grants. That was included. Representative Carlson's House File 3240, charter school cash flow issue. Representative Slocum is proposing that this a paperwork reduction in the state-generated special education paperwork requirements. Representative Marquardt brought a proposal to us to do a boundary realignment between the Moorhead-Dilworth and school districts. Representative Moran, again, All Kids Count, which has to do with disaggregating student data reporting. And Representative Ward, which addresses the board and procedures governing the Purpich School. There were also some DFL amendments offered when we marked the bill up in committee that we accepted, one having to do with teacher bargaining language on school safety, career and technical education centers, educators by Representative Mullery, and some reporting on staff diversity brought to us by Representative Mariani. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loon. For those of us who are not as familiar with the very complicated E-12 funding, could you explain a little bit more where the money is coming from that's being redistributed in this bill, the $52.3 million, how that comes to be? And I thought I heard that there was some choice for some school districts about whether they paid that money, and that makes me wonder whether the funding is really there in the bill or whether it's kind of contingent on other things happening.
You know, Representative Loon, I can have you answer that question, and I guess anyone else that's got a question on your presentation, maybe we should also just walk through the spreadsheet as well. But I'll defer to what you want to do, Representative Loon.
Well, Mr. Chair, why don't I try to address Representative Liebling's question, and we'll defer to staff if necessary, and then we could walk through the spreadsheet, or I'll have Ms. Johnson walk through the spreadsheet.
Okay.
Representative Liebling, the loans that we're talking about is called the maximum effort loans, and these are a program where the state offered to issue bonds to school districts that had sort of poor property value areas and had difficulty with their bond needs for school facilities. And these are 50-year bonds, and many of them carry higher interest rates than would currently be available. And the way the program works is that most of those districts have a local bond as well, and then they pay to the state on their requirements. But if after 50 years the school district does not pay back the bonds, the responsibility is extinguished. And so there is the question of whether or not all of those school districts with the maximum effort loan would pay it back. While the maximum effort loan is in effect, it's called maximum effort because the levy that the local property taxpayers have to pay each year is at a fairly high rate. It's, I think, 29.3%, something like that. So it's a very high rate. So the state, we have done this before. I think the last time was in 2011. We offered an opportunity for school districts, if they wanted to or felt they could, to get out from under this loan. They could issue their own bond, pay back the principal amount to the state, and theoretically ease somewhat the burden on their local property taxpayers. Does that help?
Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That does help a lot. Thank you, Representative Loon. But so I take it from what you just said that because this is sort of a refinancing opportunity for school districts, which should reduce their costs, that this, even though it's optional, that this is something that you basically expect them all to take advantage of? Is that kind of the way this works? And then could you just be a little more about how the money then ends up back in our budget?
Representative Loon.
Yes, that's essentially it. And I'll let our fiscal analyst talk to that because it's my understanding when MMB does these notes, they actually, I think, contact the school districts and assess the likelihood that those districts that have a maximum effort loan would step forward to do this refinance.
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, yes, the process that the department went through is to look at all of the 11 districts that currently have outstanding maximum effort loans, and they honed in on six that they were pretty confident were going to be willing or interested in participating. And those districts, they have been contacted very recently, and they have confirmed that they are interested and that those numbers are solid.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a question of Representative Loon. So the school district is going to issue the bonds, and can they simply issue those bonds then by a vote of the school board, or are they going to have to go to their voters? Just how does that work when the local school district is going to be issuing bonds now?
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, I think I will defer to Ms. Johnson to explain the process for the committee.
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, the districts, when they originally got the loan, had to go to their voters to get the they had to get legislative authority, but they also had to get their local voter approval. And just like when a conventional school district goes out for bonds and chooses to refund those bonds, they do not have to get voter approval on that, but they do obviously have to do a board action or go through the full formal refunding process through a municipal advisor. And
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I spent a long time since I had any references at all to the maximum effort loans, and I didn't know quite how that worked. But so there has been a vote then, and they're just simply under no obligation, I guess, to have another vote. Okay, thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for going through the numbers. It is, for those of us who don't sit on the Education Committee, it is hard to know, or we can't know, how many children are served by each of these numbers. So as you're, wouldn't ask you to repeat anything, but as you're going through any other numbers, for example, a mental health number, how many children out of how many children are actually going to be served with this new money? So we have some sort of context here.
Representative Loon?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, you know, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the exact numbers, but I can give you, let me take a crack at it at this way. On the mental health grants in particular, we currently have a program, and this is through the Department of Health, that offers grants to all school districts across the state. And so what we're doing is augmenting those current grants for fiscal year 17, and actually the money would be available through the end of the next biennium as well. So as schools are seeing an increased need in mental health services, these additional grant monies would be available, and then the school districts contract with community providers to come into the school and help provide these services to the children. So again, I think there's maybe two school districts that have not participated in that, and I've been looking into why that particular reason is, but to my knowledge, all except perhaps two across the entire state access those grant funds.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, now I'm getting the number of schools involved, but for the money, is how many students now will get services, and how close is that number to what the defined need is the question.
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius. I don't know. I don't know how many, if it'll be additional children served, presumably, or additional services for children currently being served under a mental health grant. I'll just have to get back to you to see if I could get a student count on that.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Representative Erdahl, and then I'm going to go to Ms. Johnson. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Loon, I'm very glad to see that there's an item in here on mentoring partnerships. Mentoring certainly very important to retaining teachers, I think. Could you tell me just briefly how this mentorship partnership works?
Ms. Johnson, or excuse me, Representative Loon.
Okay, and Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, are you talking, when I mentioned mentoring partnerships, we have two specific grants for mentoring partnership programs. One offered by, it was Representative Tice's bill, and the other Representative Moran's for Girls in Action. Were those the ones you were interested in, or mentoring of teachers?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mentoring of teachers.
Okay.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl. Yes, there are... we provide some funding for some what is called Grow Your Own programs that have been initiated. Minneapolis Public Schools has started one. St. Paul Schools has started one. Other schools are looked at it where they have very dedicated paraprofessional staff that is interested in perhaps obtaining their teacher licensure, and they would apply for this program to the extent that grant funds are available to help with the expenditures, and they can be provided with tuition help, perhaps a stipend if they're in school and need help with some of their expenses, as well as mentorship into their new profession as a licensed teacher. And then we've also got some flexibility with compensatory aid, and that where schools could use some of that money for recruiting new teachers, more diverse teachers, and mentoring of those new teachers into their school environment.
Oh, Representative Erdahl?
Thank you. That's good.
Okay. All right. At this time, Ms. Johnson, maybe we can have you go through the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm happy to. The first document is the legal size, and this is the appropriations. As you know, in education, there's state aids and a local property tax component, and we have a spreadsheet for each. The spreadsheet I'll speak to first is the appropriations tracking. And just to give you a brief overview of how it's laid out, we have on the spreadsheet on columns B through I are the governor's proposals, and then the columns to pay closest attention to are columns J through Q, and particularly for the change items that are proposed in the House's bill is in column M, as in Mary. And so, and then as the spreadsheet is laid out by the general order of the articles in the bill. So the first section is the general education program, and this is by far the largest area of general ed in state funding for schools. It's for, you know, general operating of the districts or for their funding, and provides the greatest amount of undesignated funding. But the changes that are proposed, if you take a look at lines 18, as Chair Loon referenced, the Glenville Emmons referendum fixed the ballot language, changed them. There is a state aid cost. It says on the spreadsheet here $36,000, but the updated fiscal note has referenced that as $50,000. So that will be for FY17. The next item on line 19 is the equity bump for non-metro districts. And Chair Loon mentioned that as well, at 7.7. For the first year of the program, the funding will come all in the form of state aid, as the chair mentioned, and then in the future years, it's a levy aid split between the two. So for the first year, it's 7.7 for the aid and levy components of that. And then on the next section, general education excellence, there's the QCOMP adjustment that is also in the governor's bill and proposed in the House bill. That's a correction for two districts that were, due to a technical nature, were not being able to participate in the QCOMP program when they were told they would be able to. And so this is a fix for that so that they will be able to participate. The next page, the education excellence section, which goes through lines 100 on the next page, these are all kind of the teacher grants and supports, and I don't know how much detail you want me to go through in each of them. If you have specific questions, okay. If there's any that come out or that you have questions about, we'd be happy to answer questions on those. And that section is the $35.2 million of the total for the overall proposed expenditures. And then on page 3 of the spreadsheet, the special education, on line 116, there was a provision for Metro Deaf to be able to provide services to pre-K students, and so the governor had made that recommendation, and the House has also adopted that provision, and that has a cost of $69,000 for FY17. In the next section under facilities, you'll see the broadband innovation grants at $7 million for FY17. And then you'll see on line 40 the maximum effort loan repayment initiative. And the reason it comes up as a savings on here is it's a one-time reduction in expenditures. Usually the general fund makes the payments for our, in theory, the maximum effort districts would pay, and excess payments that they make to the state would pay the debt service, but in practice the general fund is making those payments, and so it's a general fund savings, because with the six districts that are participating would pay in or refund their bonds and provide the proceeds to the state so that the state doesn't have to pay the $52.3 million in to the debt service fund. So that's a one-time general fund savings, and that's why it shows up as a savings there. And not too many other provisions. On page 4, there are a couple or three items on lines 179, or 178, 179, and 180. The early childhood rating system, sometimes referred to as parent aware, and a one-time increase of $2 million. 179, the parent-child home program, one-time increase of $2 million. And the chair's bill for the St. Cloud early learning pilot program is a one-time of $430,000. And then just two other small ones in the self-sufficiency and lifelong learning on page, or on lines 201 and 202 for ABE grants and the GED test. Those are $400,000 and $120,000 respectively. And then in the state agency section, starting on line 218, the chair referenced the fact that we are proposing to have the special currently, when teachers pay to have their license, to receive their license, they pay that fund, those fees to the state, and that goes to the general fund, and it's non-designated. And then the operations of the Board of Teaching and the licensing division is paid through a direct appropriation to the Board of Teaching and those organizations. And the proposal that we are proposing is that instead of having the Board of Teaching and Board of School Administrators funded through a rider in this agency budget, that the special revenue fund fees would be deposited into the teacher licensure account, and then we would then make an appropriation out of the special revenue fund to directly fund the Board of Teaching. So to kind of more closely link up the operations of, or the functions of licensing. So that's what a lot of things that are going on in this section are doing. Instead of, like I said, having the riders in the agency section, they're now in the special revenue section. And then there's one other change on line 225, the Regional Centers of Excellence. The House is proposing to discontinue funding for that program, so that's a savings of $1 million per year. And okay, that's about it there. And then to be able to show on page 5, if you take a look at lines 285 and 286, the teacher licensing fees. Usually in education, we're only dealing with expenditures, but in this case, because we are looking to dedicate the licensing fees and take them out of the general fund, we have to have an adjustment for those coming out of the general fund, so that's a cost in terms of our overall target. So there's a reduction of $1.865 million in FY17 that needs to come off in 17, or as a reduction, and then so that leads us to our target on line 306, which shows when we account for the loss of revenue that the target nets to zero. So it's a long way of getting there, and it's complicated, and I'd be happy to answer questions if you have detailed questions on those. But and then the last page just shows the flow of funds for the proposed educator licensure special revenue fund, the funds flowing in, and then the appropriations to the Board of Teaching and Board of School Administrators. So that's the aid portion. I don't know if you want me to briefly talk through the levy one, too. There's just three items on that one.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do that one, Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, there's also the education finance levies, and that's the property tax impacts that result from this bill. And you'll see on here that for FY17, the levies have already been, or for pay 16, fiscal 17, the levies have already been set, so there won't be any impact for this biennium. But for starting in FY18, there are the impacts, as I mentioned previously, for the equity revenue bump for the non-metro districts. That's a $5.8 million annual levy increase. And then there's two pieces for the Glenville Emmons. The way that they were able to do it, because they were, we allowed them to levy for a year earlier than their ballot language indicated, and because they're in statutory operating debt, the department is allowing them to spread out the levy increase over a three-year period, so it's $100,000 increase per year over base, and so that $100,000 is reflected on line 15, and then there's a corresponding operating capital offset on line 10 for that. But the overall impact for the biennium for our particular budget is $5.8 million in levy impact.
Okay, discussion to the spreadsheets that have been just presented. Discussion, further discussion to the bill. Well, Representative Carlson, did you raise your hand? I'm sorry.
Yes, going back to, so then, and we, this came up, I asked some questions in the tax committee. So there is a tax increase in the bill, even though it's in the out biennium, it's just shy of a $6 million tax increase.
Representative Loon, do you want to speak to that? Because I think that speaks to the amendment that was just put on.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Carlson. Yeah, the amendment that I added indicates because for fiscal year 17, with the extension of the equity revenue bump to non-metro area districts that were paying all of the aid and levy, beginning with fiscal year 18, which is where that potential impact shows up, a school district must take action to affirmatively opt into this program. So if they do not opt in, then that property tax impact would not happen in those districts or in their particular district.
But Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, if they the testimony we just had from staff, though, was that the levy increase was 5.8 million. That sounds like a tax increase to me.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that presumes that all districts will opt in, and so that's how it's scored. The presumption is that they will, but with the amendment we added, each school board must take action at a public meeting, allowing public input at that meeting to affirmatively opt in.
Yeah, I understand, Mr. Chairman, I understand that. That's But you know what you just said what the action will be. So I would read that there is a $5.8 million tax increase, at least potentially. Just want the other side of the aisle to know that there is a tax increase in the bill.
I think, Representative Carlson, the taxes will be increased if the local school boards choose to increase them. Is that a fair way to say it?
Mr. Chairman, I went around and around with issues like that with Palente when he was cutting aid to cities and counties, and when they had to raise their property taxes to offset the cuts. He said, well, that's a local school board decision, but it was decisions that were being made here in St. Paul that forced those property tax increases. So, but just want folks to understand that there is a potential levy increase here of just shy of six million impact on property taxes.
Well, I don't think there are any.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to make sure that there's full disclosure for some of the folks on your side of the aisle that take a very hard line on tax increases. There's one in the bill.
Well, I guess there is one in the bill if the school boards in each of these districts chooses to have a public hearing and opt to vote to have their school districts have one. Other discussion? All right, seeing no further discussion, I'm going to temporarily lay over House File 3858 as amended. Representative Nornes. Representative Nornes moves that House File 3237 be referred to the General Register, and we've got a couple of amendments. Representative Nornes, I think the A26 amendment is yours. Why don't we deal with both of the amendments? Representative Nornes moves the A26 amendment. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This deletes Article 2, and the fundamental reason for doing that, the bill you just heard from the K-12 Finance Committee has the same provision in it, so we're deleting it from my bill, and it'll be carried in the K-12 Finance Bill.
Discussion to the A26 amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A26 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A26 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, then I will move the A27 amendment. And members, let me describe the A27 amendment. You'll see that, first of all, on page 1, line 2, this deletes on page 15, section 1, which is some language relating to fetal tissue research that is in the bill now that was added in the Higher Ed Committee. So this would delete that language on page 15 that would require the university to set up a fetal tissue research center. And instead, there's several other sections. First of all, what it would do is require that when there's fetal tissue or stem cell research that the research project get institutional review board approval, and that the board must look at whether non-human tissue is an alternative. Members, I mean, institutional review boards are often used, I would say almost fairly standard practice when you're reviewing a research project starting out. And so this would just confirm what is already being done in some cases but not being done in every case, and require that in the cases of fetal tissue research there would be an institutional review board approval. Secondly, it would ask the dean of the university's medical school or his or her designee to identify sources for fetal tissues that might be available that are due to the natural death of a fetus. And if they do identify those sources, to make recommendations to the Board of Regents on updating university policies and procedures to encourage the use of those sources, as well as let other people know about those sources. Thirdly, there is some reporting language, a report that would be due January 15, 2017. And there's a definition on page 2, line 11, basically defining what fetal tissue is. And then on page 2, section 2, there is a bill that Representative Matt Dean had brought forward, which basically has some additional clarification of university policy and procedure issues, institutes a system of inspections and audits, conducts education outreach programs, and establishes an anonymous reporting system. And members, in bringing this forward, I have had several discussions with the university, and it's my understanding that the university does support the A27 amendment. So, members, discussion to the A27 amendment. Representative Carlson, then Liebling.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. In looking at the amendment, I see the word shall is used when you referenced Representative Dean's part of the bill. And having dealt with university funding and riders, they always requested that that be avoided, even though they would be perhaps in agreement with the direction, but we would use the word request, you know, so the university is requested. It was different when we would deal with Minsku because they're subject to state law. I'm talking about the university's autonomy, and sometimes they guard very carefully with that language when shall is used as opposed to request, even though they might tell you that they agree with what you're attempting to do. I just mention that. I'm not going to propose an amendment other than I haven't gone through to see how many, if there are other shells or not, but that one jumped out in that last section of the bill.
Sure, no, thank you, Representative Carlson. Yeah, you remind me of the sort of constitutional issue that's out there sometimes, but I guess I did review this with the university. I talked to them, and I guess in this particular case, we didn't talk about that issue, and they said that they were supportive of the amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm just pointing out that they have a history of being very careful about the use of the word shall because of the autonomy question.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to see if the university would come down and answer questions about this amendment.
Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony? I guess maybe just ask, we'll let Representative Liebling ask you some questions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Knobloch. My name is Erin Dady. I'm Special Assistant to the President for Government Relations at the University of Minnesota.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Dady, we heard the Chair describe the University's position with regard to this amendment. And first of all, I would like you to explain the University's position with regard to the amendment, if you would, because I think some of us might have gotten different impressions about where the University stands on this.
Ms. Dady.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, thank you for the question. We really appreciate the progress that's been made in this amendment, especially the protections for a medical discovery team, which the legislature invested in last session, and that there are no restrictions on the university's research. And so this is a step forward, and I really want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your work working with us these last few days. This amendment has come up quickly, and we don't yet have a fiscal note. So the lack of resources are a concern for us at the university.
As long, any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a couple other questions for Ms. Dady. First of all, or for you, Mr. Chair, as the author of the amendment. So I note that what the amendment does is delete Section 1 of Article 4, and that leaves Section 2, which is a direction to the legislative auditor to do a pretty extensive review of the same things, essentially, as I've read it here quickly. This looks like the same things that are required under the amendment for the university to put in its legislative report. And I would like Ms. Dady to comment on that duplication. Maybe that's part of what you're talking about as being a resource issue in part, but also you, Mr. Chair, I wonder if it makes sense still with the amendment to leave in the auditor's review, at least in terms of the timing of this. You know, certainly we all appreciate when the legislative auditor investigates something for us, but that also costs money. And I don't know if it makes any sense anymore to have the university report no later than January 15, 2017, and then I don't exactly know what the timing is of the legislator's report, but maybe somebody could comment on that, or the auditor's report.
Well, I guess maybe I can first, I guess I would, let's see. Well, let me first say, Representative Liebling, that the university was fine with leaving this language in. As we had our discussions, they didn't request that it is taken out. I think that there are some additional things that are in the legislative auditor language that aren't in the language in the amendment, and so I guess I would make that comment. And then I think I'll go to Representative Dean and then Ms. Dady. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Dady. You had said that the opposition to the university at this point from the A27 Knobloch amendment is purely fiscal. Do you have any opposition to anything in the text of the bill or what the legislature is asking the university to do?
Ms. Dady.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, thank you, and thank you for your work on this issue. Representative Dean, with appropriate resources, the university is willing and able to conduct the research on the alternative sources of fetal tissue research. We think that's one of our core competencies at the universities, is to take a research question and look into it. So with appropriate resources, we are willing to do that.
Representative Dean.
And Ms. Dady, are you aware, and perhaps Representative Liebling, that we had appropriated money for the legislative auditor to do the things that we were asking in the legislative auditor's report? The legislative auditor came back and responded that they would complete the report within the budget that the legislative auditor currently has. So do you understand that the legislative auditor's report is not asking the legislature to appropriate any additional money?
Ms. Dady.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that was a question to Representative Liebling. Is that correct?
Is that either one.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you asking me that, Representative Dean?
Go ahead.
Representative Dean.
Yes, Representative Liebling, are you aware that this is not, the legislative auditor has not asked the legislature for any additional money for that report?
Well,
Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not used to being asked a question in committee, but so I wasn't really aware, Representative Dean, whether or not they had, but I am aware that using resources of the legislative auditor does cost money. Whether it's they're going to use money that they've already got, they're still diverting some money from some staff time from other things that they would be doing. So, you know, even I'm glad they're not asking for an appropriation because I don't know if any would be available for them. But the fact is that these kinds of investigations do take a lot of staff time, and it costs money to even issue reports. And there are, we put a lot of demands on the legislative auditor. And so I'm really asking whether we're, in light of this new amendment, whether there are things here that are duplicative that could be streamlined so that we're not having things done twice, or at least if the problem is that maybe you don't trust or somebody doesn't trust the university and wants to check up on them, whether we could phase this so that the legislative auditor does their review afterwards so that you're not just simply having two different bodies study the same issues. That's kind of where I'm going with this. And I'm not making an accusation. I'm just asking a question because we've got a new amendment here that does a lot of the things that it seems like we're asking the legislative auditor to do.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And we actually did appropriate money for the legislative auditor to go ahead and do that. And this issue really came about as a result of the several members of the House reaching out to the university about fetal research and whether or not aborted fetal tissue was being used in specific research at the University of Minnesota was told no. We then found out that that was not the case and that there was a contradiction. It seems to me that it is entirely within our rights and certainly within our responsibility to make sure that the University of Minnesota is, number one, following state and federal law, that it's following its internal code of ethics, and that it is transparent both to the university and to the state of Minnesota, which I think, as somebody who went to the U, likes the U, wants the U to do well, I want to make sure that that happens. So that's the intention of that, and I was very happy to see the legislative auditor pick that up. Also very happy that the University of Minnesota is willing to go through that and answer those three important questions for us moving forward in a very open and transparent manner. It's very, very concerning to the to all of us here that we get the right information from the university and that we can depend on the information that we're getting from the university. So this isn't a small deal. I'm happy to see the amendment, Mr. Chair, moving things in the right direction and would support that.
Other discussion to the 827 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, being that the university is at the table, I wasn't originally going to call them up on this question. I'd like to revert back to the Shell and me. I was on that committee for many, many years, a few decades, literally, that dealt with the funding of the university. And any time we used must or shall, the university was very quick to make a request that we use the word request. And they regarded that constitutional autonomy, even if it was a relatively minor issue, they held to that principle. And I was told, I can't give you an example, that they even turned down appropriations at times if the words shall or must were used. And since I raised the question, I did a quick read. And this is sprinkled through with the words shall and must. Has the university changed their position about their autonomy?
Ms.
And the protecting of their autonomy? Ms. Dady?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, thanks for the question. We certainly have not changed our position on autonomy, and if a member of the Board of Regents were here, they would certainly have a strong position on that. But we are comfortable with this language today on this issue as it's written.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, that's with the words must and shall. Must is actually stronger than shall in legal terms. That's not the history of the university. And we were always cooperative, and to quote people who sat there on behalf of the university in the past, when I would ask the question and I wanted to give some direction, mm-hmm. and they'd say, can you use the word request, they would, and I would say, well, how are we going to be assured that that's going to happen? And the answer that more than one person gave was, well, we have to come back next year, mm-hmm. meaning that the legislature did have oversight. But they did guard those terms very carefully, and I may be the only one on the committee that's concerned about that, but I have had a strong history of working with the university and agreeing, especially when you're dealing with research, and sometimes it can be controversial. Mm-hmm. That we protect that autonomy. I think the state of Minnesota benefits from it, and I see this as a step in the direction of unraveling, if you will, that university independence that the university guarded so strongly. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that the 827 amendment be adopted.
Oh. It's after the amendment, Mr. Chair. I'll ask my question when you...
All right. All in favor of the 827 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The 827 amendment is adopted. All right. I'm not aware of any other amendments. Representative Nornes, could you go ahead and present the bill?
All right, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom, did you want to ask a question now?
Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask a question of Ms. Dady while she was at the table, if possible. Otherwise, if we can call her back when we get to the money, I'm fine with asking later.
All right, let's call her back at that time then.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that, Representative Hillstrom. Well, here she is. We might as well get it out of the way. Go ahead, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Dady. My question is, did the University of Minnesota make a request for additional financial resources, and did you get what you requested?
Ms. Dady.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, thanks for the question. We did make a modest supplemental budget request for our most urgent and pressing needs at the University of Minnesota with a statewide impact. We think they'd have a significant impact on the student experience at the university. We're looking for resources related to cybersecurity, some health training restoration, some mining investments, and some healthcare investments. And so we thank the committee for its consideration and know that the budget target was lower than where we'd like it to be, but hope to see some investments come off at a conference committee.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So could you just clarify how much did you ask for and how much is in the bill?
Ms. Dady.
Sure. We asked for just over $30 million, and there was zero in the bill.
Thank you.
Representative Gruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dady, could you review for us, for the biennium, what is the increase in the base over the last biennium that the university received from the people of Minnesota?
Ms. Dady.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, last year we received a $30 million investment for our medical discovery teams at the medical school, as well as $22 million in tuition relief for our students.
So, Mr.
Representative Gruskowski.
Thank you. So, thank you, Ms. Dady. So, that was the total increase in $50 million over what you had the previous biennium. Is that correct?
Ms. Dady.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe the total amount was about $53
million. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Dady.
Thank you, Ms. Dady.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Nornes, please present your bill.
All right, I don't know if it's been mentioned, Mr. Chair, but we have a zero target, so let's see. I'll know that, all right?
Zero.
I'll try to go through maybe just the high points, if you if that's fine. If you want to go deeper, that's fine too. But the Article 1 of the higher ed bill deals with the Office of Higher Education, and it does a few things, including how funds are appropriated from programs and passed through program or grants that they're appropriating or operating or administrating, and so forth. It describes how they can deal with a surplus if there happens to be one in the state grant program. We have extended the state grant program, the child care portion of it, to students that are in school who are now probably in a graduate program or a professional program, primarily at the University of Minnesota, but other schools too that may have that. So that's new. There's language pertaining to the teacher shortage loan forgiveness program, and it restricts the 5 years is the maximum that a person can claim that forgiveness. Then moving on to let's see, the next part would deal with again the Office of Higher Education. They're requested to gather information dealing with dual credit policies at Minsku and university colleges and universities here in Minnesota. Information that's going to be given to middle and high school age students, so they have some idea on how those programs would benefit them, and that information will be on the website for them to see. One other portion deals with a requirement that nonprofit and public employers disclose to their employees who may be eligible for public service loan forgiveness programs, and it's just an awareness, and it's done annually beginning in January of next year. Again, that benefits those students. There is also in section, in that same section here, Section 12 removes language requiring the Office of Higher Education to annually report data about Minsku Occupational Scholarship Pilot Program. This program was enacted in 2015 and provides scholarships for students enrolling in eligible technical programs leading to employment. And that's kind of a, I believe the original idea was to have free college for these technical schools, or free tuition, rather, and so this is the pilot program based on that. Then, moving on to Article 3, this is a pilot program that's being suggested to Minsku. It's a program for students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It requires Minsku to develop a plan for offering this program to students, and up to four campuses could be involved. That hasn't been decided. Program would provide an inclusion, two-year full-time residential college experience, excuse me, for those participants, and it would lead to an appropriate academic credential upon completion. Again, that would be a two-year program. It also extends the ability for those same students to access the financial aid of the state grant program. Then I believe we're kind of to the last article, Article 5, that deals with monitoring the psychiatric drug trials at the University of Minnesota. The Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities will be overseeing those services and treatments. So that's new and part of this bill. I didn't pronounce it right, but you know what I'm talking about. I know that disappoints me when I mispronounce something, but it's it happens. So I believe. Oh, I got to turn the page. One more article here. I'm sorry. Article 6. This is a bill that Representative Norton had brought to the committee dealing with the University of Minnesota Rochester. And the article requests that the Board of Regents at the university establish a collegiate recovery program which I personally think is a really, really good program. Provides structural, academic, career, and personal support for students in recovery from alcohol, chemical, and other addictive behaviors, and all, at the same time allows them to complete their post-secondary educational experience. And that, by the way, would be the cost would be absorbed by the University of Rochester, University of Minnesota, Rochester. And members, I think that's the end of our bill.
Well, Representative Norris, I am very tempted to ask you further about the Office of Ombudsman, the powers of the Ombudsman, the reimbursement of the Ombudsman, but let me see if anyone else has any questions.
The bugs part is easy to say. The rest of it doesn't flow off.
Questions for Representative Norris. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Norris, I just have a question about, I don't see the intervention for college access program in here, and I'm just wondering if there's any funding for the ICAP program.
Representative Norris.
There's no funding.
No additional funding for that.
Anything. Yeah. Thank you. Now, we have high hopes that prayers and whatever it takes will, you know, find money somewhere. Maybe
at least he's on.
We'll see. But right now, that's our bill.
All right. See, no further discussion. I'll temporarily lay over House File 3237 as amended. Members, now we're going to get to the part where we put the bills together. So I'm going to move that House File 2749 be referred to the General Register. And then I will move that we amend House File 2749 with the contents of House File 3858 as previously amended, and to also amend the title. So, members, this motion would have the effect of taking House File 3858 as amended, the Education and Finance Bill, and adding it to House File 2749. Is there any discussion to that amendment? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just really a question for you, since I haven't sat on this committee before this term. So what does it look like? What does the rest of the process look like when you get this bill assembled and you have these different bills together? I mean, what does this line up with what the Senate is doing? Are you planning to have some kind of subgroups, work with the conference committees, or exactly how do you envision this going forward?
Well, my understanding is that going back a number of years, at least 10 years, the process in the even numbered year has been that there's been a supplemental budget conference committee. We in the House have, I think, taken different paths in some of those different years. In some years we've passed, for example, there are 8 different supplemental finance omnibus bills that are before us over the next few days. Some years we've taken all 8 as separate bills or a separate bill for each division. Some years, I think more often when your caucus is in charge, we've had just one supplemental finance bill. This year we're proposing sort of a middle ground of 3 finance bills when these bills are merged. The Senate, meanwhile, has pretty much always just had one supplemental finance bill that they pass all together, similar to what your caucus has done when you've been in the majority. And my expectation is that House File 2749 will be the base bill along with its Senate companion, and that there will be one supplemental finance conference committee that conferees these 8 bills. Other questions to Representative Pawlowski?
Yeah, Representative Neblock, I've got a question on the targets. Once we combine K-12 and higher ed, is Representative Norris's prayer answered and suddenly there is money that could be commingled here, or does the target stand for K-12 and the target stand for higher ed?
Representative Pawlowski, the target stand for K-12 and the target stands for higher ed.
Thank you.
Other discussion? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, does the money that K-12 has on their spreadsheet that changed
then become part of the whole to be used? Or does the money that K-12 has on their spreadsheet stay with K-12?
Well, the money that K-12 has on their spreadsheet would be part of the K-12 articles in the bill, and so it would all be within that target for K-12. Is that the answer? Is that what you mean? But if you're asking, can you?
The target is still zero.
It is.
So does that wipe out the things that Representative Loon recommended changing appropriations for?
Well, no, I think Representative Murphy, Representative Loon is funding the various proposals in her bill through the maximum effort loan refinancing. And so she has approximately $52 million of additional funds she is getting through the maximum effort loan refinancing, and then she is allocating those funds amongst the various uses that were described.
And that money from the maximum effort loan could never become part of Representative Nornes's prayer.
Representative Murphy, it is a separate target. The higher ed bill is a separate target from the education finance bill, and so we couldn't transfer funds from one to the other.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think it maybe warrants a little more discussion when you say the targets stand. Could you explain what you mean by that? Because one interpretation is that the targets stand as the bills are going through the House, and the ability to move via amendment from one account to another. But when you get into conference committee, what do you mean by the target stand?
Oh, well, Representative Carlson, of course, once you're in conference committee, the Senate has their target, we have our target, and we will need to come to some sort of an agreement on what the joint target will be. And yeah. So the target we have only stands as long as bill is in the possession of the House.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that's what I'm asking for the clarification for, because I've been there, done that, and you negotiate new targets in conference committee. And sometimes those targets can be somewhat specific. Sometimes it can be a rather general target. You can work within that overall target once that's agreed upon relative to the conference committee. So, in other words, it's basically once the bill is through the House, and as you say, is no longer in the possession of the House, then the House rule no longer applies relative to targets, because then there will be separate targets negotiated between House and Senate.
Yes, Representative Carlson, that's my understanding.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure that that was understood by committee members. Maybe everybody understood that, but I wanted to clarify when you said the target stands.
Sure. Oh, glad to do so. Representative Pawlowski, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, my only question would be a clarification. The bill comes to the House floor. An amendment is on K-12 and move it to higher ed. That would be ruled out of order because the targets are established and you couldn't move that money from the K-12 account to the higher ed account.
Representative Pawlowski, yes, that would be my interpretation of the rules.
Or if Mr. Marks wants to clarify, but that would be my understanding if these targets are what you say they are.
Mr. Marks has a slight clarification.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, members, you could, in a sense, move money out of K-12. You can't add it to higher ed. That the target is the upper limit of spending. So K-12 could be lower than zero. Higher ed can't be higher than zero.
Okay.
That's a, Mr. Chair, thank you. That's another way of answering the question.
Representative Carlson.
Complicated further, there's another rule that you could have used rather than a budget resolution where you'd be able to raise revenue, but you couldn't spend it. I forget the number of that rule, but you remember you had two alternatives, budget resolution and rule, was it 5 point something?
4.05.
Which is an interesting rule in and of itself. If you had an appropriation out there of $10 million and you wanted to raise the revenue to $11 million, you could do that, but you couldn't spend it, the additional million. So I think I'm correct in an interpretation of that rule, and I think Mr. Marcus is saying yes. So targets are an interesting topic.
They are an interesting topic.
Not for all of us. Okay.
All right. Any other discussion?
I might respond to my colleague. I think when he was chairing one of the fiscal committees when we were in the majority, he was very interested in the targets at that point in time.
Well, I hadn't really thought that your side would be interested in Mr. Marx's point that you could reduce the target, but that is a new point of information. So, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 3858, as amended, be amended on to House File 2749 and the title be adjusted accordingly. Seeing no discussion, all in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 3858 as amended is amended on to House File 2749 and the title adjusted. Okay, members, next I've got, I'll take House File 3237 and move that it be amended on to House File 2749 as House File 3237 has been amended and that the title be corrected accordingly. Discussion to that motion. See no discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
A motion prevails. House File 3237 as amended is amended on to House File 2749 and the title to be adjusted accordingly. Okay, members, we have House File 2749 as amended before us. Any discussion on that? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't comment on my disappointment with both of these bills that are now merged with the zero target. And I think it was clear that the two chairs, with their presentations of the bill, I think would have liked to have had something different before us. Clearly, Representative Nornes, chair of higher ed, said that just a few moments ago when he was hoping for something better. And if I recall correctly, I think Representative Loon commented that she was hopeful that something better would come out of conference committee. No, you didn't. Okay. You're happy with the zero then. But at any rate, with those zero targets, and when I look at what the Senate is doing, they use the $52 million, but they put an additional $48 million there, and it puts it just slightly over $100 million being available for K-12. I think in light of the fiscal situation for the state, that's a very reasonable approach, and it would do any number of things better for K-12. And higher ed, with the zero funding, and I think the word higher power was used, I don't know what that may mean, but the Senate is at $47.7 million. But I think we have to kind of keep in mind a couple of things about higher education. If I recall correctly, the community colleges are something like in the top five in the country in the cost of attendance, tuition. Almost daily, it seems like, in the media, you're hearing about student debt and the difficulty students are having and meeting those obligations so that they can attend. And I remember one of the chancellors a few years ago expressed concern about that with the Minscu system. And he commented, you know, he said, you can't really look at it from the standpoint of a single student because many of them ultimately get married and you've got two student debts, and they want to do all of the things that a typical couple might want to do, buy a house, maybe buy a car, maybe start a family, and the difficulties that they experience because higher education has become so expensive. When we were in the majority with the work of Representative Pawlowski and others, we had the tuition freeze. We tried to get a handle on that. And so here we go again with a zero target, and again with the financial health of the state. Currently, we could be doing much better for the students, whether they're in E-12 or in higher education. And so I do have to express my disappointment, and I'll be at least one member voting no on the combined bill for those reasons.
Our Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just would like to comment on that also. You know, we have zero targets on both of these bills, and of course those zero targets didn't fall from heaven. They're a choice, you know, maybe Representative Nornes is praying, but these targets did not fall from heaven. They're a choice made by your caucus. And Representative Drazkowski noted that there was an increase in the budget last year for the university. You know, that's all good. But you have to realize that, and I'm not on higher ed, and I'm not on K-12, but certainly in higher ed, we know that over the last at least decade, that the portion of tuition that's being paid by public sources at our public colleges has been falling, and that more and more of the tuition is being picked up by students, and they are feeling it. And now we're in a situation where we do have a $900 million budget surplus. And some of that money could be used to help those students to reduce the cost of a public education. And what this committee is about to do and what the House GOP is doing is saying, no, we're not going to spend any of that money to help students afford college. I think that's really unfortunate. You know, if we were in a situation where we had no money, if we were in a deficit situation, it would certainly be understandable to have a zero cut target, even a cut target, because you have to do what you have to do sometimes. But we're not in that situation. This is an absolute choice. And what you're able to do is relative to what you can do. I mean, that's sort of circular, isn't it? What you're able to do is relative to how much money you have. And here there is a deliberate choice being made to do nothing, to have zero targets in both of these areas when we know the needs are there. You can't say that there are no needs and that's why you're not meeting any needs. So I liken this to, you know, you may be feeding your child only one meal a day. Well, if you're desperately poor and on the street, that may be the best you can do. But if you're a millionaire, that would be considered child abuse. And so I think that that's what we're looking at in these two bills. We've got tremendous needs across the state in E-12 education and in higher education, and the House Republican Caucus is deciding to do nothing. And some of the members I know would really like to do more, and you're hoping that, I suppose you're hoping, you know, praying to a higher power, and maybe the higher power is the Senate, maybe the higher power is the governor, I don't know. I know the DFL members are certainly hoping we come out better. And so, Mr. Chair, even though there are some good things in these bills, but I certainly can't support them because I think it's absolutely unreasonable to have zero targets for higher education and E-12 education this year.
Representative Kahn.
Well, both of my colleagues have done an excellent job in talking about the weaknesses of these bills. The only thing that hasn't been mentioned is the lack of foresight of what happens at the next level. The economics of the state and the well-being of the state is highly dependent on the degrees of education of the people of the state. Most of the jobs that we're having trouble filling are jobs that require higher levels of education and more educated people to fill them. And so this kind of short-sighted view of the educational needs of the state really ends up being a very short-sighted view of the total well-being and the economic welfare of the state. And I just wanted to put that extension onto their excellent descriptions about why we should vote no on the bill.
Okay, well, for those that are listening to the audience or are watching otherwise, I guess I just do want to remind people that, in fact, we are on a two-year budget cycle here in the state. We set our budget last year for the next 2 years, including this year. There were substantial increases for this biennium and this year over the previous biennium and the previous year 2 years ago. In the K-12 or E-12 education finance area, it was far in excess of a $1 billion increase. While there is a zero target this year, Representative Loon, through the maximum effort school loan refinancing, has come up with a way to actually spend what I think most people would consider an additional $52 to $53 million, which is a very substantial additional in put of money in a supplemental budget year on top of the additional money and additional increase that we already had last year. And as far as the higher ed area goes, we again did have increases, significant increases in those areas last year. We have a tuition freeze for the four-year schools coming up in this coming year. We actually have a tuition decrease for the two-year schools coming up in this other year. So, there are other areas that we did not act on last year, transportation being one of them, tax reform being another one of them that I think also need some funds this year. And I guess for those reasons I felt, and I think the majority of this committee felt, that we should establish the targets that we have. And for those reasons, I would urge people's support of House File 2749 as amended. Well, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I just to respond to something that you're saying there, and I tried to get at that point when I mentioned that our community colleges remain among the most expensive in the United States of America. So my point is we've got a way to go. Not too many years ago, probably when you were in the legislature, what I'll call Oblock 1, when you were here before, but not too many years ago, the benchmark was that students paid one-third the cost of instruction, and the state covered two-thirds. And with that formula, we were able to keep tuition at a reasonable level. And through the years, for a variety of reasons, that's eroded where it's virtually on some campuses, and I think I brought it up and maybe in this committee or another one the other day, where it's now flipped on many of those campuses where it's the students are paying 60% to 70% of the cost of instruction through tuition. So when I look around the room here, most of us, if we attended a public institution in Minnesota, benefited from a much lower tuition level. In fact, at one time, our state universities, before we went to one-third, two-third, were something like about 25%, 26%. So it did even creep up then. But for a long time, we held it at the one-third, two-thirds. And that's why I think you're hearing about students and the high cost of attendance and loans to get the education. So my whole point is, yes, you set a two-year budget last year. As was pointed out, we did drop a little bit with our economic growth from 2.9 to 2.5%. That's why we went from, 1.2 billion surplus to 900 million. But the projections were still for continued growth at just not as high a level. And I think what some of us are trying to say is that the students in our higher education system, because they are paying more than previous generations, should benefit from some of that. And those kinds of investments, as Representative Kahn pointed out, have paid huge dividends for the state of Minnesota. That's why we are where we're at. And it's kind of like a member when I first came in, when he was talking about higher education, I think his name was Representative Smith from up north. He said, you have to be careful when we were dealing with education budgets, and he had the higher ed budget. You have to be careful you don't eat your seed corn. And when we're not investing in education, we're eating our seed corn.
Any other discussion to the bill? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Pulowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch. I agree with you. There was a significant investment in higher education in 2015. It was $166 million that we invested with the governor in higher education. Despite that, there are tuition increases at the University of Minnesota both years. There was an increase in the four-year Minsky system last year. That increase, by the way, rolls forward. so the base is higher. So even though you freeze tuition this year, they're still paying more. But it begs this question. If we invested $166 million last year, the budget year, and there was no intent to invest more, why did higher education hear 37 bills for a total of $178,945,200? So we heard more this year than we invested last year, and yet the target was zero. Does the $178 million demonstrate a need, and that's why we heard them? Or was it just an exercise in wasting committee time, public time, and disingenuous to the people that had to travel here to testify on those 37 bills, to which there was never any intention to fund them?
Well, I guess Representative Pulaski, I'm not on the Higher Education Committee as a voting member. I believe that many of them were heard with the best of intentions in terms of trying to decide if we should have additional spending on them. Later on, we decided that the correct target, in our view, for higher education was zero, but I'm sure that the people on the committee got further educated, and I expect that that additional education may come in handy even later this session. Representative Pulaski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we remind the state that this is the non-budget year, and that in this year, we as legislators should treat it as a non-budget year. And if the intention was not to spend any money, then I don't think we should waste their time or ours or staff or anyone else, and we should face the issues that are usually before us in a non-budget year, a bonding bill perhaps, and the issue of either transportation funding or some type of a tax reduction. I think when we are looking at the $178 million this year, non-budget, we invested $166. There is a real problem with this process. That's an opinion, not a question.
Representative Murphy?
No.
Okay. All right. Seeing no. Representative Dornis?
I was just going to add one thing that.
Please do.
You know, if the targets were set the first week we're here, that would make a little difference, and it's not the way it works. So, as chair of this committee, I have to defend what we did. We're in full, I guess, cooperation and faith with both sides. We tried to hear all the bills without any guarantees that anything was going to get funded. We have another year next year. Many of these bills will probably come back. We'll know more about them when that happens. So I think that's part of what you as a representative believe when you come here, that your bills are going to get at least a hearing someplace, sometime, without any guarantees. And I think that's what we tried to do in my committee. I didn't consider it to be a waste of time, and I think if you talk to people that were either on the committee or came to my committee, they would tell you the same thing. So I do it over again. End of story.
Seen? Nope. All right, one more. Representative Liebling.
And thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just want to comment that that Representative Pulaski's opinion on that is not necessarily the opinion of all the DFL members. You know, I hear you, Representative Nornes, that you didn't necessarily know what the target was going to be. But beyond that, I think, personally feel that there is a value to hearing bills because people of the state want to bring their needs forward. And if you choose not to meet those needs, well, you know, that's on you. But I think people should be able to bring their needs forward and have those needs heard and understood. And sometimes a bill that gets heard one session gets taken care of, funded, or enacted the next session. So I don't think that's a waste of time at all.
Any other discussion? All right. Seeing no further discussion, Chair Lanua's motion that House Bill 2749, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
A motion prevails. House Bill 2749, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Thank you, members. And
our time, Mr. Chair?
Our time for meeting tomorrow will be 12:45. Representative Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chair, is it your intent to add Representative Loon and Representative Nornes' name to as authors on 2749?
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. See no further questions. With that, we're adjourned.